It's episode 302 of Underground Wellness Radio with our main man, David Getoff. Here's what's coming up.
So if your child weighs one quarter of what you weigh, and a banana would be a piece of fruit for you, then a banana is a four pieces of fruit for him, or four pieces of fruit for her, because it's that much more sugar in relation to their body weight.
Yo, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to Underground Wellness Radio, brought to you by undergroundwellness.com. Today's show totally rocks. We've got our buddy David Getoff back on the show. He hasn't been on the show for about 2 years. We got to bring David back way more often. Several years ago, gosh, 5, 6, 7 years ago, when I first got into this whole real food space, David's class, I think it was called Attaining Optimal Health in the 21st Century, was like the first class that I went to about real health. And we've stayed in contact ever since. He's out here in San Diego, and he's one of the most knowledgeable people that I know on so many topics. You guys got to check out his website at davidgetoff.com, as well as the Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation's website over at ppnf.org. Lots of really great books and videos and research over there that I think everybody can use and check out. We're talking about behavioral problems and depression, anxiety, and ADD and ADHD in children, which has become a huge, huge problem. And there's so many doctors out there that are, you know, dishing out pills and whatnot for these kids to be on for maybe the rest of their lives, when, you know, a lot of it is being caused by diet and making some very simple yet kind of hard at the same time. Changes to the diet can really go a long way with a lot of children. So if you have children, you know somebody who has children who has these problems, please forward this show to them. It's really, really good information from David. If you have not signed up for the digestion sessions yet, go over to digestionsessions.com and get signed up. We get started on November 9th and we go all the way through November 23rd. We've got some free videos over there for you guys to check out about the gallbladder, as well as constipation and a few tests that you should definitely ask your doctor to order up for you if you do have digestive problems. So check that out again at digestionsessions.com and join us over on Facebook, facebook.com/undergroundwellness. Enjoy the show. David Getoff, welcome back to the show. How you been?
Very good. A pleasure to be back. It's been a while. How I've been, just busy and feeling bad at how long it takes me to get back to people because I'm too busy.
I heard that, man. I think it's been about 2 years since the last time you were on the show. And every time you're on the show, you crush it. And people send me emails like, oh my God, I love that guy. You got to have him on more often. Don't know why it's been 2 years. Hey, are you still, I remember a couple of years ago, we filmed something at your house and me and my camera guys rolled up and you were in the street or in front of your house on your pogo stick. Are you still pogoing?
I still do some pogoing. I still do some jumping on my mini trampoline rebounder. I just do a whole bunch of things, whatever I decide to do that day.
Hey, well, why do you do that? You just do it for fun, or is there a health benefit to that?
Well, no, there's definitely a health benefit to bouncing. You know, NASA, I think, did the original research years ago that jumping up and down on things like a mini trampoline are phenomenal for your health, because every single cell in your body, it's like when you jump on a scale. If you could instantly record the second you jumped on that scale, it might be two or three times your weight. And what happens is every cell in your body is getting that same effect. So you're getting an exercise not just to your biceps or triceps, you know, your leg muscles. You're getting an exercise to every single cell in your entire body. Some people, after they've been bouncing on a trampoline for 3 or 4 months, end up having to go into the optometrist and get one less strong set of prescriptions for their eyeglasses because, you know, their eyes are getting stronger. In addition to which, of course, it stimulates lymphatic flow, which is phenomenal for detoxification, for immune support. So it does a whole bunch of good things. The only thing that jumping on a trampoline doesn't do is it doesn't do much for your core unless you're really doing a lot of extra things, throwing your feet out in front of you, doing things that you better learn how to do right so you don't fall off, you know, crack a bone, jumping off the trampoline and yell at me. But there are ways to do core on that. However, if you're on a pogo stick, you're doing totally different things, because anybody, I mean, I have 80-year-olds that buy a trampoline, put a little support bar on so they have something to hold on to, and start gently going up and down the trampoline. You've got to have and develop, even better, really, really, really good balance to do that on a pogo stick. Most people can't do that. So your balance is improved phenomenally more on a pogo stick than it ever could be on a trampoline. Of course, it's a little bit more aggressive to your joints, but, you know, that depends on how high you bounce. So any kind of bouncing is good for you as long as it's not hurting your joints, which is why you don't want to jump rope unless, you're good enough to be able to not fall off and hurt yourself to jump rope on a trampoline.
Yeah, and it's a whole lot of fun, too. You look like you were having a blast out there. I was like, I want to try that. I still haven't. But you know who likes to have a lot of fun is kids. But nowadays, you know, kids have like ADHD and ADD and hyperactivity issues. Kids have depression. They've got anxiety. You know, it's unfortunate, really, that kids have all these problems going on. And I feel like we're missing the boat. We're missing the root cause of these things. One root cause may be diet. Do you think diet is playing a role in these problems that kids are having?
I would say that of all of the various causes, I know we'll discuss a bunch of them, probably the single most dominant cause, the one which is the largest aspect of all the problems the kids have, is in fact diet. Mostly things they're eating that they shouldn't be, to a lesser extent things they should be eating that they aren't.
Eating what? Like what foods cause this?
Well, I came up with a word. You know, I've never patented anything. I've never trademarked anything. That's just not me. I just don't do that. And recently, maybe a year ago, I realized that for years and years and years in my lectures, I've been using a term that I sort of just came up with a long time ago for the three categories of foods that either are sugar or rapidly turn into sugar and cause major problems in many people, but specifically in kids. And because they prevent you from other prevent your body from holding your blood sugar level and doing a lot of other things, I decided I would simply name them sabotage foods. And when I asked my attorney after doing that for 5, 6, 7 years, I said, could I get a registered trademark on something as simple as sabotage foods? He said, probably not, but I'll put it through for you. So I now have a registered trademark on sabotage foods. I can put that silly little, you know, circle with the R in the middle under that and under results-based nutritional medicine. But sabotage foods are those foods that sabotage your body's ability to do all the things that it would like to be able to do for your health, and with a specific one being holding your blood sugar level, which is very, very important for reducing or eliminating hyperactivity, for leveling out attention deficit. It simply can't be. Most parents, I don't know about most parents, I've never done a study on it, but a huge percentage of parents know that if their kid eats a candy bar, whatever that candy bar may be, they can see that their attention gets worse or their hyperactivity all of a sudden comes in, or, you know, various different things like that. They simply don't understand that in addition to not having them eat the candy bar and that they do better, that there's lots of other foods that they wouldn't think of that do the same thing because of how rapidly they turn into sugar in the body. And that's sabotage foods. Sabotage foods is three categories of food, one of which hopefully we don't have to address with children, which is alcohol, which the body turns right into sugar. The other two are starches and sugars. And I always like people to, you know, understand if they don't know what a starch is, go look it up online. But starch is in many carbohydrates, but not all of them. So I hate the word carbohydrates. I don't tell people to go on a low-carb diet because I like them to have broccoli and cauliflower and asparagus and ripe peppers and lettuce and tomatoes and all those different things. None of them have starch in them. Starch is not there. But they are carbohydrates. But so are a tablespoon of sugar and a piece of bread and a bunch of grains. Those are also carbohydrates, except those are predominantly starch. So potatoes, corn, sweet potatoes, winter squash, yams, those are all mostly starch, and all grains are mostly starch, and all beans, although they convert into sugar more slowly, are mostly starch. So the things that absolutely makes the biggest effect, the foods that make the greatest detrimental effects on kids and on adults in different ways, are starches and sugars. And people don't grasp the starch part. And so they're trying to have their kids eat less candy bars and drink less soda. And of course, to me, that's, in other words, you want them to be bitten by a rattlesnake less often? How about never? You know, or at least very rarely on a holiday only. But they don't understand that piece of multigrain sprouted whole grain bread is just as bad It's just that instead of being sugar in their body this instant, like the candy bar will, it'll be a big bolus or a huge amount of sugar in their body, maybe a half an hour to 45 minutes later when the body turns it all into sugar, you know, or some potatoes or some corn or some rice cakes or some crackers or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, starches are the ones that they forget about. So the kid's basically eating some kind of cheese and noodle dish that they happen to love, and the parent doesn't understand. They are causing the hyperactivity. They are causing the attention deficit disorder. They are causing the immune system to be less, so they're more likely to get sick. And they're doing all this, and they're not doing it on purpose, but once they learn it, now they're doing it on purpose.
So I want to make sure that we're clear on this. Are you recommending that no kids eat starches and sugars, or is this something that you want parents to monitor? If your child has a problem with hyperactivity or with emotional issues, behavioral issues, these are things that you should monitor in their diet.
Well, the best answer to that is that I ask, you know, people always say, do you always ask a question with a question? Well, you know, okay, yeah. So the question is, how good do you want your child to do in school? How easily do you want them to be able to do their homework without it driving them nuts and bothering them? How easily do you want them to progress to the next grade? And of course, any parent is going to say, well, that's a stupid question, David. I want them to be able to do their schoolwork as easily as possible, progress as easily as possible, be able to access whatever abilities they want. If they want to go to college or grad school, I'd like to be able them to be able to do it. And so therefore, I say, then let's do an experiment. And the experiment is fairly simple. It's just different, and you have to be diligent. And the experiment is that the amount of time it takes for the longest lasting in the body of the bad reactive foods, and the longest lasting happens to be wheat, is about 6 weeks. In other words, if you have one little tiny bite of a piece of multigrain, whole grain, or organic bread, it is going to be doing whatever damage it's doing in your body as far as sugar only for the next few hours. But as far as other ways that it reacts to your body because of inflammatory conditions caused by wheat, that can be up to 6 weeks. So I tell people, what you really need to do is a 2-month experiment, no matter how hard it is. And, you know, you can give the kids a gift. You can say, well, we're going to go to Legoland, or we're going to go to some theme park that they love, something or other, so that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And you show them a calendar. This is how many months we're going to do it. We're not going to do it right now because it would take you through something that you want to have, you know, like Thanksgiving or New Year's. So you pick a time that works, and you say, we're going to do a 2-month period where if it tastes sweet, none of us are going to eat it, and none of us is very important, because if you want to really have this not work, then you eat the stuff you're telling the kid that they can't eat. That's nasty. You just don't do that. So I always apologize to the parents, and they sort of smile at me, especially if the kid is not in my office, just the parent is. I always say, look, and I'm apologizing to you and your spouse for all the benefits you're going to notice in your own health while you're doing this for your kid. 2 months of nothing that tastes sweet and nothing that contains starch. And you see what kind of changes you see in your child during that 2 months.
What if the child has no problems in the first place? You still want to do this 2-month experiment?
Yes, because during that 2 months, they're going to see so many improvements in the child that had no problems that it's going to amaze them.
Does the child ever feel punished by this? Because I can understand like the scholastic benefits and behavior and all that stuff. But from a social standpoint, I mean, if I went to school in fifth grade and I didn't have a Capri Sun, if I didn't have my peanut butter and jelly sandwich and I ate, you know, a piece of meat with some broccoli, I might get picked on. Is there any issue with that when you do this with your clients and their kids?
I find that it is an issue if they don't bring it up correctly. And so you don't bring it up that you're doing it to the child. You bring it up that you're doing it for the family. So, for example, mommy or daddy, and a lot of homes these days are single parent homes, which makes it more difficult. We can cover that later, because the kid is then at some other parent's house, which is their other parent, and the other parent thinks this is nonsense and isn't going to do it. So we can't get the 2 months. We got to get them both on board. But the idea is you discuss this with the kid. You say, I just learned some things that are very, very important. Now, usually, if the kid is old enough to understand, you can talk to them. They can talk back to you. And of course, that age varies as far as understanding, depending on the child. You know, you've got 4-year-olds that are much more cognizant and can deal with you, you know, than somebody else's 6-year-old. So I'm not going to give any ages, but assuming you can communicate with the child can communicate with you. You know what's going on. What you do is you say, we've just learned some things which are very important to me being the parent is saying that, because I want to be here for you for all your life. I want to be here when you grow up. I want to be here when you get married, all sorts of things you can't even think about now, but I want to always be here. I want you to always say, yep, my mom's still here. She's, you know, one of the older people now, but she's still here and she's healthy. And we've learned that if we want that, we have to make some changes in our diet. And the changes sort of bother us a little bit because it means we have to eliminate or reduce some of the foods we like a lot. So we're going to do a 2-month experiment. I just want to see how hard this is. And of course, you're part of the family, so you get to do it with us. And that way, you're not doing it where it's the kid's fault, where it's the kid is the only reason for it, where they're being punished. We're all doing this together as a family. And when it gets discussed correctly, it changes things a lot.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Now, when you say no sugar, sometimes people get confused. Are you including fruit as well?
Well, in order to not confuse people, I try to be really, really clear. So what I say is nothing that tastes sweet. But then I go further, and I go further specifically because of the fruit issue. And what I do is I give examples. So the best example I've got, and this has happened more than once, so I'm giving you an example as though I'm talking about a particular person, because I am, but I could talk about many families. It doesn't just have to be the one I'm talking about right now when I bring it up in my mind. And this is a woman who had an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old son. She came to me because her two sons were both having emotional problems, hyperactivity, you know, failure to be able to concentrate.
That's what she came in for. And she said, you know, somebody told me that you could make a couple little diet changes and give us some supplements that would help a lot. And if that will help adequately, then we're not going to do any of these drugs because I really don't want to put my kids on drugs. They have all these different side effects. And I said, fine, that's great. I love to do that with families. I said, but one thing that I always do, and generally people are a little put off by the fact that I do it at the beginning, but it's required, is I need you to do a 6 to 8 week diet change before we add in any special supplements, because the vast majority of all of the issues that your kids have is due to the food they're eating. I understand you're not doing this to them on purpose. I'm not, you know, getting mad at you or your husband, but that's what's happening. These issues are being caused by the food you're giving them, even though you don't realize it. And if I give somebody some supplements that make some minor differences, which are very easy because you're just swallowing them, or the kids are, then they never realize that the major benefit they could get would be from changing the diet. So I insist that you do 6 to 8 weeks on a perfect diet first to see how much the diet is causing the issues, and then we add in the additional supplements for some extra benefits. And she said, okay. She said, I'll be willing to do that. What are we doing? And I said, we're pulling out anything that tastes sweet, and we're pulling out anything that contains starch. And, of course, we don't have to drop alcohol because I'm sure your kids are not consuming alcohol. She said, no, of course not. She said, now explain to me what starch is. Tasting sweet, I know what that is, what starch is. And I have to go over that starch means all grains, and it means all beans, and it means the particular vegetables that are high starch, you know, which are basically all the different types of potatoes and sweet potatoes, all the different types of winter squash and yams and pumpkins, and corn. And then I emphasize that one particular substance, which is wheat, whether it's regular wheat, whole wheat, semolina wheat, durum wheat, I don't care what the hell it is wheat, you know, couscous, which is wheat, that takes 6 weeks to clear out of the body. So if you goof and you go, oh, darn, I completely forgot, and I always make the same recipe, and I always put a tablespoon of wheat in to thicken up the sauce, and so we had wheat that day, you got to start over. So do it right the first time. It's much easier than having to do it again. She said, okay, that's fine, and let's make your second appointment 2 months from now so you will have done that, and then we can talk about adding the extra supplements in. So I get a phone call from her after 6 weeks, and she says, I know I'm going to be seeing you in, like, I think it was about 3 weeks, but I haven't seen any difference in either child at all. can't we just start the supplements now and see what those will do? And, you know, I try to be nice. I mean, I don't want to put my clients or patients down. That's not the point here. I'm trying to support them. But, you know, what I said was, I find it hard to believe after being, you know, in practice for a couple of decades, that the first time I've ever had any child that hasn't seen a major difference when we've pulled out starches and sugars is going to be two different children, and they're both yours. So most likely there's something we're missing. Let's go over this again so I know that you're doing it right. She said, well, you made it very simple. They're all fall sweets. They're, you know, all the candies and cookies and cakes that they used to eat, they're all gone. And they haven't had any grains, and they haven't had any beans, and they haven't had any potatoes. I understand starches and sugars. And I said, I don't know what to say, because I've never, ever seen somebody not tell me, wow, this is amazing. So you're telling me that if every single thing either of your sons have eaten in the last 6 weeks, I had a taste of, I would never say, that tastes sweet. And she hesitated for a second, and she said, well, of course they're eating plenty of organic, raw, fresh fruit. Everybody knows that's good for you. And I said, what part of nothing that tastes sweet did I not get across to you? And she said, David, we're talking about organic, fresh fruit. You know, the stuff that everybody says, the doctors say, that the media says, the government says, loaded with antioxidants, very good for you. And I go, yes. Yeah, they all say that, and they're all wrong. So you're telling me that the reason that my kids haven't noticed, that I haven't noticed a difference in my kids' emotional behavior is because of the fruit. And I said, no, I can't say that, because I don't have a crystal ball, and I'm not all-powerful. I can't say that's the reason, because it hasn't been shown yet. All I can tell you is it's the only thing you haven't cut out, and I've never seen anybody not have a major difference. And she was so pissed.
I bet.
And, you know, she said, fine, we'll do it again, and the phone clicked off. And I was convinced I was never going to hear from this woman again. And I got a phone call about 3 weeks later, just before she was going to come in for their next appointment. And she said, I guess we better postpone the appointment because you wanted it to be 2 months after they'd been off everything. Thank you for not believing me. Thank you for quizzing me to find out if there was anything I was missing. I have two completely new children. Let's make another appointment. So, yes, I do mean fruit.
So everything or anything that's sweet. You know what? Even I find myself like looking for exceptions. I got to ask you, because if I don't, I'll be mad at myself. Stevia. Can you have stevia or just nothing that sweet? Nothing, nothing, nothing.
Well, yes. Stevia doesn't cause any of those problems.
Yes.
So yes, somebody can have stevia, but I'm trying to make it easy.
Yeah.
And what I've found is that the biochemistry of the body is such that there are two reasons we grab for something sweet. One of the reasons is we love it. It's delicious. It's something that we've conditioned ourselves to love over the years, sweets and salt. And the second is the biochemistry of the body, that the blood sugar is going down, and your brain knows that the way to bring it back up again is with a starch or a sugar, and so we're grabbing it for that reason, even though we don't realize it. And it seems, from my experience, that after about 3 or 4 weeks of nothing that tastes sweet, the biochemistry is starting to level out, because you're replacing it by having enough meats and enough fats to level out your blood sugar. And so that appears to be 60 or 70% of the I need something sweet. And the remaining lesser percentage is, darn, the stuff tastes good. So if we remove everything that tastes sweet, within a few weeks, it becomes much easier to continue the experiment. But if we start bringing in stevia, which isn't going to cause those problems, then the desire for sweet never goes away and gets toned down, and something is more likely to be in their area that they shouldn't have, that when parents not looking, they're just going to grab it and have it anyway. And anything we can do to tone down the desire, at least for this 2 months, is worthwhile. So I cut them all out, and then afterwards I go over the ones that are acceptable.
Okay. I get the biochemistry about why we crave sweets. I get the biochemistry of the desire. People need to know about, like, why. Why are we taking these foods out? So talk about how these sweet foods, these starch foods, like, how do they cause ADHD or ADD, behavioral problems, depression, anxiety? Is there some type of connection to the brain? What's going on there?
Well, they cause it in a couple different ways. The main thing is the sugar itself. And when the body is going nuts, working overtime, the two organs that are designed, although doctors are only taught one of them, the two organs that are designed to regulate blood sugar are the pancreas and the liver. And when you overtax an organ and it can't do all the other things it's supposed to be doing, all sorts of things go haywire. And most parents can see in their own kids that everything's fine, they're coloring within the lines, or they're playing their video game or whatever it is they're doing, and they come in, they say, "Mom, I'm hungry," and they have if the parent is willing to give it to them, they get a bag of chips or some Cheetos, they'll grab a candy bar or any of a number of different things, and they can see the change. So they know there's something going on, and when the blood sugar gets dysregulated, our emotions get dysregulated. This is true of all sorts of people. As far as attention deficit, which is sort of the opposite, if somebody eats lunch during a seminar, conference, or class, in other words, they're in school or at their conference or seminar, a very large number of people after lunch are going to have a hard time keeping themselves awake listening. They're going to find themselves starting to fall asleep. Their eyes are closing. They'd like to lie down. And that was 100% caused by the sabotage foods that they ate with lunch. And if they instead had lunch of 100% fats and proteins, and they didn't have a piece of fruit, and they didn't have a glass of juice, and they didn't have a couple of chips or a half a piece of bread or some potatoes or anything else, that goes away, and they're astonished. So one is just that the lack of blood sugar, our brain doesn't work correctly, and we know that. That's been proven for hundreds of years. Lack of blood sugar, the brain doesn't work correctly. It's just that most people, especially diabetics, think, well, yeah, and the reason that that happens, obviously I have to correct that. So if I start to feel that, I need to drink a glass of orange juice or have a candy bar to bring it back up again. No, because it brings it up too far, too fast. It overshoots where the body would like it to be. The body produces a whole bunch of insulin and says, we don't want it up that high, and knocks it down lower, and now we're tired all over again. And that's why I call them sabotage foods. So if anybody wants to see in an adult, if they want to do an experiment to see, well, wait a minute, I'd like to see how bad these things are and whether I can notice any difference at all, then I have people do a four-day experiment, which is very telling, because a lot of parents, after they do this four-day experiment on themselves, they have a little bit more grasp of how it can be throwing their kids' biochemistry off. And that is, you pick a food that you like a lot that's an animal protein. And most people pick eggs because it's easier, but I really wouldn't care what it is, because you're going to have the same food for 4 days in a row and the same quantity of that food for 4 days in a row. And it has to be an adequate quantity that you're really full. So for most adults, it's going to be 3 or 4 eggs cooked however you want. I don't go over how they should cook them for this experiment. I'm not trying to make them super healthy. I just want them to see the results. So 3 or 4 eggs, large, extra large, jumbo, whatever, 3 or 4 eggs cooked however you want, but you can do it 4 days in a row. So the first day, for breakfast, you have your 3 or 4 eggs cooked however you want to cook them. I don't care if they're fried or poached or hard-boiled, whatever you want to do. But you can't have anything else with them except a little bit of water if you're thirsty, or if you want to put a small amount of a non-starchy vegetable in it, you want to put a little bit of broccoli or cauliflower or asparagus in there and make it an omelet, that's acceptable. But you can do the same thing for all 4 days. So if you do it, make sure it's a vegetable that you really like, because it's going to be the same all 4 days. You finish eating, you write down what time it is, and you purposely don't eat anything until you begin to get hungry. In other words, if normally 3 hours later you have a snack, hit your hand when you go for that snack and say, wait a minute, am I really hungry? And go, no, actually, today I'm not hungry. So we want to see what time you finished breakfast and when you begin to feel hungry. And you write that down, and then you write down when you begin to feel hungry, and now go ahead and eat what you're going to eat. Today's experiment is finished. Tomorrow, you eat the exact same 3 or 4 eggs, write down when you're done. Again, write down when you start to get hungry. Now, day 3 and 4, we still have the same amount of breakfast. We still have the same number of eggs. But now we're going to add in additional calories, and the additional calories have to be a sabotage food. So if normally you would have had maybe a little bit of home fries or french fries, go ahead. You can add that in. If somebody else said, no, I usually have a little mashed potatoes with my eggs, you can add that in. If somebody else says, no, I usually have a piece of multigrain whole grain bread and butter, fine, you can add that. So you pick one food that's a starch-based food, whether it's potatoes or bread, or maybe it's a glass of fresh-squeezed orange juice, and we add that in. So you're now eating quite a bit more calories. You're going to be a lot more stuffed. That's fine. Don't worry about it. Write down when you're finished and write down when you get hungry. And the parents don't believe it because they're now hungry 45 minutes to 2 hours earlier with the extra food because you ate a food that sabotaged your body's ability to hold your blood sugar level. They never believe it. That's why you do a fourth day. You do it again, and sure enough, again, we've had more calories, we left the table more stuffed, and darn if you're not hungry sooner because you prevented the body from holding the blood sugar level. And then they start to get it, why it doesn't matter how healthy they're feeding their kid if they're also putting this stuff in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen that a lot. It's a trip how you're eating more calories, but you're hungry a lot sooner. That's crazy. Is there any connection here to brain inflammation?
There is absolutely connection to brain inflammation. They have seen more inflammation caused by sugar, whether the sugar comes in as sugar or whether it comes in as converted from starch. They're seeing even more brain inflammation and inflammation in other areas when it is a wheat issue. A very large percentage of the public, they haven't done a big enough study for us to have a number. If I had to make a rough guess, I would say 80 to 90% of the U.S. and or North America, let's add Canada in here, public, is inflamed and getting specific problems due to the consumption of what we call wheat, even though it doesn't resemble the wheat of our great ancestors. And a lot of times somebody actually has to test for that to make certain, otherwise they won't be diligent enough to cut it out because their doctor has said wheat is not an issue. The doctor has done like a celiac test, which is so inaccurate they should stop doing it. And they said wheat is not a problem. Don't worry about it. And they keep on eating wheat. They don't realize wheat may be a bigger issue in their kid than sugar. It just depends on the child. So, you know, we pull everything out the first time because it's so hard to do it. We pull it all out at once. And then we can pick the thing that the mother or father says, I don't think that's part of it. I really don't. Fine. So at the end of that period of time, we leave all the other things out, and we bring in first whatever item the parents go, I really don't think this is it. We've cut it out because David said it's all got to come out together, but I don't think that's it. So we bring just that in for 4 or 5 days, whatever the that is. You know, maybe it's their multigrain whole grain bread. I don't know what it's going to be. And they see if, oh, my. Wow. We just lost 2/3 of our benefits in 4 days. Or maybe they find, wow, I was right. That isn't an issue. We can keep that, whatever that thing is, and go to the next one because we are all different.
Hmm. I've heard a lot, or we've had a lot of people on the show who have talked about the connection between brain inflammation and gut inflammation. Now, looking at this 2-month experiment, it seems like you're taking out a lot of gut irritating food. So do you think that's part of it, that the gut is healing?
It is part of it that the gut is healing, but I don't personally believe we can get very much healing done in the gut, even though the gut cells turn over very, very rapidly. I don't think we're getting a lot of healing done in 2 months, because any time we've done tests on that, and any time people have done research studies on that, they found that if somebody's reactive to a specific food and they're not truly reacting to it, they're only reacting because the gut is so inflamed and is so leaky that something that shouldn't get past it into the bloodstream is in fact getting there, that it takes about 6 months worth of avoiding that food to make that part go away if it's not a true allergy. So I don't think we're getting a lot. I think that the direct inflammation of it coming in, getting into the bloodstream, getting into the brain, I think the brain is more than just the gut, even though, of course, if the gut was in perfect working order, we'd have less issues. And there are some supplements we can talk about that can help the gut heal and make a big, big difference. But people need to understand, if you fall down, I don't care if it's the child or the adult, and you scrape whatever, let's make it your arm. You scrape your arm up real bad, and the next day you take a look at your arm, and there's a whole bunch of little tiny pieces of clotted blood on there. And of course, you know, if you pick one off or fall down and scrape it, it bleeds again. That area is now so sensitive that I could take a feather and rub it up and down your arm, and you could say, you know, don't do that, it hurts. Because you have now gotten it so sensitive by scratching it that it is now much more easily hurt by things that otherwise wouldn't bother it at all. And that's the same thing that happens inside the intestines. So if the intestines are inflamed and not working as the way they should because of all sorts of different foods that are a problem, then it doesn't take much to cause an additional problem until we can get them really, really healed. And therefore, if somebody is already having this issue and all you take out is just the one major thing, let's say maybe in one child, the big, big thing, 90% is wheat, and we pull out wheat, because of how inflamed the area was in the intestines, so many other things that shouldn't really be causing a problem are now causing it. We're not going to get healing. So we end up having to pull out a lot more things, even though they're not the main issue, they're just little sub-issues, to get the healing done. And then we can bring a lot of those back, but not all of them. And, of course, sugar will always be an issue because we were never designed to eat the amount of sugar we eat now.
I want to go back to this 2-month experiment because I want people to really get this and I want them to know exactly what to do because it sounds so theory to a certain extent. Like I want to see the practical side of it. Now, if I have a kid and I put them on this 2-month experiment, what am I putting in their lunch bag? I mean, is it like hard-boiled eggs and pemmican bars and vegetables? What am I doing here?
Right. Well, the main thing is that we don't want to try to force a kid to eat something they don't like. So everybody has to remember that. I am never, no matter what I'm talking about, no matter what scientific conference I'm lecturing at, I am never telling people you need to eat things you don't like. That's got to go out the door. So you always have to find out what your kid likes best, and some people know it and some people don't know it, but you need to find out which animal proteins they like best. So some kids like beef best, some kids like lamb best, some kids like chicken or veal or eggs. I don't care what it is, but know what they like best, and you should really even experiment with different herbs to find out what seasonings they like best, because then you can make something that was into like now it's delicious because you put their favorite seasonings on it. So now I don't care what they get as long as it's in the category of fats and proteins. And certainly if they're non-starchy vegetables, those are fine too. So in other words, their lunch is now going to be some chicken or some beef or some lamb or 2 or 3, you know, hard-boiled eggs or 2 or 3 poached eggs or whatever you want in that category. I don't care which one it is. Seasoned with whatever you want to season it up with, as long as the seasoning isn't a bunch of seasonings and some of these cheap seasonings where they take rice flour or regular flour and then they add the seasonings to it so you can get it to stick to something. No, now we're causing a problem. And all of the non-starchy vegetables are fine. I don't care which ones they are. So that's all the lettuces and all the spinaches and broccoli and cauliflower and asparagus and, you know, you name it. I mean, there's a lot. There are far more non-starchy vegetables than there are starchy vegetables. And some kids don't like vegetables. That's fine. You know, vegetables are not required for health. But we do want an adequate amount so they're full of the other foods. And I sometimes have to have parents enlist the teachers in the schools and say, look, we're doing a specific type of sensitivity experiment having to do with food sensitivities. And if my kid ends up desiring to, you know, trade foods with other kids, then this experiment is going to fall by the wayside, and I'm going to have to use drugs that I don't want to use. So this is very important. We're isolating some sensitivities, and sometimes it's helpful if the teachers know about it. But whether it's a couple of, depending on the age of the kid and the size of the kid and their appetite, you know, it might be a chicken thigh or two. It might be some beef. It might be some lamb. It might be a couple of eggs. I don't care. Any of those is fine. And if you're in a state, if you're lucky enough to be in a state, that raw milk is legal, then raw milk is also fine because that's not going to be an issue. But a lot, and I really do mean a lot, of kids are reactive to what we call milk, which is pasteurized homogenized milk. So that's got to go during the 2 months.
You mentioned drugs. Let's talk about doctors. A lot of parents have taken their children to the doctor, and the doctor will say, well, there's double-blind controlled studies that show that, you know, these behavioral problems, these emotional problems have nothing to do with food. So let's put your child on a drug. What do you think about that?
Well, one of the biggest studies that was done, there was only really one done, it was done decades ago, but it still gets quoted today, was that they took kids and double blind, they, you know, half the kids were eating foods that were sweetened with sugar, and half the kids were eating foods that were sweetened with something that wasn't sugar, and they found that they had the same number of ADD and ADHD reactions, the same amount of emotional problems, and so what they printed in the final result was that sugar doesn't cause any of these. The problem was that if you have a placebo-controlled trial, the definition of a placebo is a substance that has no effect whatsoever. Otherwise, of course, it's not really a placebo. Well, but now what do we have that in most people, we all have different taste buds, but that in most people tastes exactly like sugar that isn't sugar? And therefore, they used aspartame, NutraSweet equal, whatever you want to call it, the chemical is aspartame. And so what they really proved, since aspartame is a known cancer-causing agent and a known seizure-causing agent and a known neurological disease-causing agent, and anybody that doesn't understand that needs to either watch the video, Sweet Misery, A Poisoned World, which goes over everything, including the FDA investigators, or they need to read the book, While Science Sleeps, A Sweetener Kills. Both of these go over all the science. And that was what was used in the placebo. So what they really proved was that sugar and NutraSweet cause the same amount of emotional issues in kids, not that sugar doesn't. And they didn't release to the public that this was a bogus study and that the placebo wasn't a placebo. There was another study that was done on chocolate. They were trying to determine whether chocolate might cause acne because people were thinking that, you know, maybe chocolate has something to do with the acne in kids. And so they did this study, and it appeared to show that chocolate didn't cause acne, which, of course, sugar and starch are what cause acne. So I always apologize if your kid happens to have bad acne. I apologize for the fact that during these 2 months you're going to see a major improvement, even though that's not what we're addressing, because that's the cause. But the study was done, and they didn't do a pre-study assessment of how much candy and sweets these kids were getting. And so when the group that was put on candy bar was given an additional candy bar to eat once a day, they didn't realize that that was so much, so tiny of an increase because of how much they were already eating, that it didn't make any overall difference, and that was the reason. And so a much larger one was done, I believe, by Lauren Cordain a number of years ago, and they found a dramatic association with starches and sugars and acne.
Wow. Can't believe they used aspartame in that study. Wow, it's crazy. Well, speaking of that, because aspartame isn't really a food, and of course it can cause some neurological issues, are there other substances, we'll say, that can cause problems with kids besides food?
Well, wheat, of course, is a big one, but that is a food. But yes, we have many things we can be sensitive to, and we are all different, and that's, you know, never going to change. So, for example, let's take a look. First of all, let's take a look at things that get absorbed into the body other than through your mouth. So, for example, let's take some kids who are very reactive to wheat or very reactive to soy, two of the things that a large number of people react to, and that the parents have figured it out. You know, great, I applaud that. And so they don't have any soy and any wheat in the kids' diet. But they don't realize, of course, that there's wheat in soy sauce. There's wheat as a thickening agent in all sorts of different soups and stews. And so it hasn't gotten totally out. And some symptoms that have gotten so much better, they went, well, you know, is it hiding somewhere? And so they go on Gluten-Free Chef or some other websites, and they go, oh, my God, it's in two or three things we weren't thinking about. They pull it out of some more foods, and the kid gets better yet, but it still isn't gone. And they wonder where else it might be. Well, shampoo, almost all of the health food store shampoos, the better ones, the ones that have pulled out methylparaben, propylparaben, sodium lauryl sulfate, polyethylene glycol, et cetera, because we don't like shampoo that pours like water. That's too hard to use. You'll spill it all. Mm-hmm. So they have to thicken it. So the dominant thickening agents that are used in the largest numbers of shampoo are soy protein and wheat protein.
Really?
And it absorbs right through your skin, and you could actually find it in the bloodstream within a couple minutes after shampooing. And so, I mean, I went nuts trying to find a couple of shampoos that aren't thickened with wheat or soy, and don't have any other garbage in it. And I mean, I looked at hundreds of them at the Natural Product Show year after year after year, finally found two. Alafia, that makes a lot of different shampoos. The only ones they have that don't have wheat and soy in it is their coffee and shea revitalizing shampoo. And then there's a company in Canada, Carina, C-A-R-I-N-A, Carina Botanical Organics, and they have a shampoo and body wash and a conditioner, of course, that don't have any of the toxins and are not thickened with wheat and soy. So that's another place is it can be in something else. But that's not it. That's not all. Now we have all the chemicals in our environment, and, you know, one person is maybe exposed to these chemicals, and although nobody will be able to prove it because it's going to take 25 or 30 years, it'll be the reason they get cancer when they're older. And the other person, it's causing emotional problems, which if you could get out of the way, you'd actually see a difference. And that could include things as innocuous as the exterminator that comes in and sprays outside of your house, around the house for ants, or for other people, the ones that spray inside for roaches. But I mean, I have people that only spray outside. And when they stop doing that, the kids' emotions calm down. I have people who have just remodeled one room in their house, and all of a sudden the kid is having all sorts of different problems, and they'll say, I don't understand, you know, my son is this or my daughter is that. And I mean, you know, ever since we changed our diet, started working with you, brought in some supplements, they've been terrific. And what the hell happened? I mean, what kind of thing could do this, David? And my first question is always, anything that has changed in the house, anything, you're using a different shampoo, you're using a different soap, you're using a different detergent to wash their clothes, you've brought in a piece of furniture, you have remodeled a room, or they've put a new floor in, you've added carpeting somewhere, and by the time I've gone over just those five or six, I've already hit it. They've already said, yes, that's it. And then we can find a way to ascertain whether it is. So, for example, very young child. We're talking about an 8-month-old. Parents had been working with me for years. Kid was very healthy. The parents were now very healthy. Everything was fine. And all of a sudden, the kid starts breaking out with all sorts of skin reactions. And they said, we haven't changed anything. He's breastfeeding 100%. There's no other food coming in. There's no other drink coming in. We haven't changed our detergent. There's nothing going on. I said, same thing. I said, so have you painted a room? Have you carpeted a room? Have you done? Well, yeah, actually, we just carpeted two rooms. The carpeting was just too old. You know, we were going to carpet it before he was born, but we couldn't, and we're just running around too much like, you know, like nuts, so we did it now. I said, which rooms did you carpet? She said, the nursery and the hallway. Aha. I said, well, this is what I'd like you to do. I want the kid to sleep in your bed for a few days because you didn't do anything to your room. Kid comes into their bedroom, skin starts clearing up immediately overnight. Bring the kid back in the crib in his room, goes right back in bed again. So there are all these different things that can do this. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm just trying to be a detective. I'm trying to figure out what it is that's doing it, because electric fields can also cause emotional issues. They can cause headaches. They can cause hyperactivity. They can cause in both adults and in children. And so I will often have somebody do an experiment, and I'll say, look, I know this can be difficult for you. It's not difficult for me. I've been doing it for years. But I know it's going to be difficult, but I want to see, because if we've done a bunch of other things and we've got a whole bunch of major benefits, but maybe not quite as much as I want, or there's still something going on, and they say, what else can we try? And I go, let's try electrical fields. So what I want you to do is I want 2 weeks, and usually if it's one of the issues, you'll see a difference in a few days. But I just say 2 weeks. I'd rather them go, wow, we can already tell, than my wishing I'd said 2 weeks. I always say 2 weeks. And what we're going to do is we're getting rid of wireless. We're getting rid of as many signals in the house as we can. We can't get rid of the fact that the cell phone signals from everybody around are being bombarded. We can't get rid of the fact that we have radio signals. You could go in any room in the house, turn a transistor radio on, and get signals. But we can disconnect, unplug every portable telephone and just get a couple of inexpensive plug-in phones, which is all I will have in my house. There are no portable phones in this house because the portable phones are actually slightly worse based on the German research than a cell phone. So you disconnect the cell phones. I don't mean just don't use them. You have to unplug the base station. and you turn off the Wi-Fi. So, you know, somebody that knows computers has to get in there and go into the Wi-Fi unit, go into the router, and, you know, tell it to turn off the signal so it's turned off. Not just don't use it, it's got to be turned off. Mm-hmm. So the Wi-Fi is turned off, and the portable phones are turned off. Don't use a cell phone within 10 feet of the child. And that's pretty much all of the easy things to do, because other things, you could buy a book called Zapped, which goes over a lot of other different things in it by Anne Louise Gilman. One of the other things is a device called a Stetsonizer, and that changes the electrical field in your house going through your walls. But let's just do those two and see if you notice a difference. And some people go, oh, my God, not only did I notice a difference in my kid, but I've been getting headaches for months, and I haven't had a headache during those 2 weeks, and that's amazing. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different things that we simply don't think about because we are told they're not an issue. And because we're in the U.S., where this research gets suppressed, we don't realize how much research has proven it is an issue, and how many other countries you couldn't even give your 8-year-old a cell phone. You'd be breaking the law.
Okay. If I was a parent listening to this show, I'd be a little flustered and overwhelmed. I'd be thinking there are so many different potential triggers. We've got starches, we've got sugars, we've got a shampoo, we've got Wi-Fi. Is there any way to make this easier for them in terms of finding what these triggers are? Like, is there a blood test or something that they can have their kids get to figure out some of this stuff without having to do all the trial and error and elimination diets?
Well, there isn't a good blood test for sugars. The sugars would have to actually be done as an elimination, because none of the tests for sugars really show what we want them to show. That would have to be out. But as far as finding specific foods, absolutely. The biggest issue is that because of the age at which the norm values have been designed or determined for some of these blood tests, a lot of them are not done on the very young, and very often we are talking about the very young. We're talking about somebody that's 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years old, and most of the lab tests, depending on a particular test, the lowest age that they will run them where they have their normal values to compare it to generally is somewhere between 8 and 12, and it varies from test to test. But the two tests that I like best are the test by Cyrex, C-Y-R-E-X Laboratories, and it's their array number 3 and their array number 4. That's what they call their panels. They call them arrays. Mm-hmm. Array number 3 tests all 24 different reactivities to wheat. So if an adult or child tests positive as elevated in any of those 24, then wheat is very reactive in their body and they should be avoiding it.
Let me ask you real quick.
Yeah.
Array number 3, you ever had anybody test clean on that one?
Yes. And actually what I did is I got one of the local doctors who has taken my course a couple times, sent her entire staff to take my 10-week course. Mm-hmm. And she started running them on lots and lots and lots of her patients because she could often get it covered by insurance because she's an MD. She's a DO, actually. And I asked her at one point a while back, I said, so how many of these tests have you run so far, and how many people have come up where they are not reactive? And she smiled. She said, yeah. She said, we've run about 125 tests, and we've had 7 people come up non-reactive.
Hmm. Interesting.
And, of course, that's not because of anything other than the wheat that we have has been so destroyed and changed that our body says, what the hell is it? If you were testing for emmer or farro or spelt or kamut, it would not be anywhere near that high.
Hmm. Array number 4, what's that?
Array number 4 is what they call cross-reactive. So what I was saying before, that I could hurt you with a feather after I first sensitized your arm by scratching it up real bad, once you have made the gut, you know, so inflamed from the wheat, which is the main one in most people, now all sorts of other things are getting in when they're not quite as digested as they should be, and therefore they're causing an issue, which if we could get everything healed, many of those issues would go away. And so this tests 24 cross-reactive things that many of the people who react to wheat are also reactive to, whether or not it's a dominant or a non-dominant reaction. So they're testing coffee, chocolate, potatoes, rice, you know, a whole bunch of things, 24 other different things. And if you do both of those tests, and then cut everything out that's listed as a reactivity, and I believe they're saying I forget if it's 4 months or 6 months. Then you can redo only number four and see how many weren't really the issue. It's just that, you know, we scraped the area up first. And so you can bring a bunch of those foods back in again and which ones you really need to remain out.
Gotcha.
Cyrex, and Cyrex, where their tests were done, you know, a lot of your listeners, because they're more interested and more into it than a lot of other people, probably understand that we have different types of immunoglobulins in our body, that IgE is the histamine reaction that stuffs up your nose and makes you really allergic. IgG are these delayed food intolerances. The IgG test, the fact that we even have such a test, was because IgG was discovered by a world-famous allergist immunologist who I love, PhD, his name is Aristo Vajdani, and he's the one that's developed all these tests. So these are some of the most accurate tests, and they are about to, within the next 30 days, come out with a bunch more food tests, which will be terrific. At the moment, the next best lab for a large number of tests, because they can test about 350 different substances, including food additives and spices and all sorts of different things, is ELISA, E-L-I-S-A, /ACT, A-C-T, Biotechnologies. And so I'll have people order their comprehensive allergy test again, as long as we can do it on that age child, because of the amount of the norm values and the amount of blood needed to do it. So those are the two that I like best, starting with the Cyrex, because if wheat is an issue and the parents don't understand how important it is to pull it out and all the places it might be hiding, then we are never going to get the healing we need done.
Mm-hmm. I got one more topic for you, and you kind of alluded to it a bit earlier. There's a lot of single parents. There's a lot of parents who are sharing custody of their children. I got to imagine there's a lot of situations where one parent completely bought into everything that you just said, and the other parent said, oh, that's hogwash, BS, whatever they want to call it. How do you deal with that? What do you do there?
Well, it's a very difficult problem. It's really a very, very difficult problem. One of the things I do is I will ask whether or not the other person is open enough that they'll even discuss it, and I will call the other person and spend 20 minutes on the phone with them explaining that I know you love your kid. I mean, that's why you have joint custody. Otherwise, you would have said, ah, no, I never want to see the kid. You know, get them out of here. I know you love your kid. So all I have to do is find a way to help explain to you that you are harming your child by not getting on board with this thing. You are going to be part of the reason that they're not going to make it through college because they still can't concentrate, that they may have to repeat grades. And so we go over this, and in many cases, I can get them turned around. Second is when it's not the other parent, but when it's a grandparent. And this happens a lot also because, you know, hey, let's face it, especially with the economy the way it is, a lot of times we've got everybody working. Thankfully, there's a grandparent in the area that's maybe retired, and they spend time with the kid. And of course, in order to have the kid love them, they have to give them cakes and cookies. That's what makes them love them. And so we have times where the mother or father has to call up grandma or grandpa and say, look, this is going to be very difficult for me to say to you, but I can't let you keep hurting Johnny. Because if you keep on hurting Johnny, he's not going to make it through school, or he's going to end up on all sorts of drugs. So we're going to have a discussion about these different things. And again, I will get involved with that if I need to. There are a couple of good books. One is The Truth About Children's Health. And sometimes I'll say, well, you know, tell them to pick up a copy of The Truth About Children's Health. I'm not even sure if it's still in print. I bought 100 copies a couple of years ago, and I give them out for free to these people. And I say, you know, you tell your grandparent, or your parent, which is the kid's grandparent, they have to read this book, and as soon as they finish this book, you will then talk to them, and that will be the next time that you'll bring the kids over. So, you know, it's sort of like if a parent is willing to be a child, we're not going to be able to go forward, because I get that from parents. Parents say, well, but I can't stop him from eating his favorite food. I go, well, let me ask you a question now, and I'm not trying to be funny. If you just found out that every variety of that particular food, and I'm not even going to mention the food because it could be anything, is now imported from China and contains lead and mercury, would you still say, I can't prevent him from eating that food? And of course they go, of course not. They wouldn't have any. I said, good. So don't tell me you can't. Just tell me that you're not willing to, and what you've just done is you've just decided that you are no longer the parent. The child is getting part of the parenting skills. And I'm sorry, but that doesn't work. So it's very difficult to be able to do these things, but I had a parent in my office many times. I have seen this a number of times, and I let it happen every time because I want to be able to show them. And because maybe the babysitter couldn't make it that day, you know, let's say daughter or son is in my office also. And she or he is coloring in a coloring book, playing with a video game, and, "Mommy, I'm hungry." She goes into her little cooler bag and, let's say, hands him an apple. If he's old enough, otherwise maybe it's cut up. And so he finishes the apple, goes back to coloring, and especially if this happens to be my initial consultation, which is like 3-4 hours, you know, an hour later, you know, "Mommy, I'm hungry." So she goes in there, peels a banana, hands him a banana, and goes back to coloring, another 45 minutes. So we're maybe at 2 hours now. "Mommy, I'm hungry," gives him a third piece of fruit. Maybe it's a pear, or maybe it's another one of the other same fruit. And now within another 10, 15 minutes, the kid is now hyper. The kid is running around the room. The kid is not coloring within the lines. The kid is behaviorally a pain in the neck. And mom looks at me and says, "You see, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about the hyperactivity of my child." And I said, "Yes, yeah, I watched you cause that, but I wasn't going to say anything until afterwards." And usually the mother will look at me with daggers coming out of her eyes and say, "You watched me cause that? How the hell did I just cause that?" And I said, "Well, you just gave your child 12 pieces of fruit in 2 hours. And that's way, way, way too much sugar for a kid." And she will, of course, correct me and say, "12 pieces of fruit? How about 3 pieces of fruit?" And I go, "Well, you're partly right, and I'm partly right. Your child weighs approximately a quarter of what you weigh. And we're not feeding an individual. We're feeding ourselves. So if your child weighs one quarter of what you weigh, and a banana would be a piece of fruit for you, then a banana is a 4 pieces of fruit for him, or 4 pieces of fruit for her, because it's that much more sugar in relation to their body weight. So you just gave them 3 pieces for an adult equal to 12 pieces, or maybe the kid's a little heavier, equal to 9 pieces for a kid, and that is so much sugar, it sent their system haywire. So you just caused that. I'm not blaming you. You didn't realize it, but now you know why, and now you can control it." Nobody ever told them that. The doctors don't even say that. We need weight-specific portion sizes if we're going to have something that otherwise might be okay, depending on the individual.
Mm-hmm. I love how you call people out on their BS. That's great. You keep it real.
I get people that call me up and they say, "I know I haven't seen you for like a year or so, but I need another injection of David Getoff because my doctor won't tell me these things." The psychologist, I go, "You know, you just say, look, well, but I have to, it's my job." And I go, "Well, yeah, but isn't it their job?" "Yes, but they don't do it."
Speaking of honesty and keeping it real, I got one last topic for you, then I'll let you go. A couple months ago, I had Shauna Young on the show, and we talked about how in Colorado, the powers that be, the government, whomever, is taking away some of the, or limiting the scope of practice for traditional naturopaths up there. And you reached out to me in an email and said that you wanted to talk about that as well. I was like, I don't know if we want to do a whole show about it because we just talked about it. Let's do something else. But I do want to hear your take on that situation. What are your thoughts?
Okay. And before we do that, let me just give all your listeners one hint. There's 2 supplements that I have found that do more than any other 2 supplements in helping heal the gut. One of them is a really good probiotic. And although there are numerous probiotics on the market, the company that or the companies, there are 2 of them that I found have the best are Seroyal of Canada, Seroyal. Their product is called HMF, which stands for Human Microflora, but HMF Forte, and Pharmax, PHARMAX. I have nothing to do with these companies. I don't make a penny when you buy something from them. The other is called Pharmax. They're the actual manufacturer, and it's Pharmax is owned by Nigel Plummer, which is one of the top probiotic scientists, and their product is called HLC high potency. They both have other products, and all of their products are good. Those are just the ones I use the most often. And, you know, capsule once a day, small kid, half capsule once a day with food. I don't care who's told you the probiotics should be away from food. They're wrong. That's been very well researched. They just don't know the research. And the second substance is colostrum. Colostrum is an unbelievable substance when it comes to helping the gut heal. Obviously, if you're still bringing in the foods that cause the damage, then you're working against yourself. But if you're not, and you want the healing of the gut to be accelerated, colostrum is terrific. It even works in people who are dairy intolerant, although sometimes you have to use a little bit of less in it to start it out to get the healing. And the best colostrums on the market are colostrum LD. The LD stands for liposomal delivery, colostrum LD from Sovereign Laboratories in Arizona, and Immutech. I-M-U-T-E-K, colostrum 5. I use mostly now the colostrum LD. I buy their 16 ounces of powder, and I usually use for an adult, and you can extrapolate down based on body weight, I use a tablespoon twice a day, about 45 minutes before breakfast and before dinner. It's a little bit more active. You take it before. If you forget, you can take it with food. So if you got, let's say, a 50-pound kid, then that would be a teaspoon twice a day. But taking that in, even for as little as a few months, can do more healing for leaky gut and the intestines and helping reduce reactivities than almost anything else I know of, as long as the items that are causing the issue are not continuing to come in. I just want to put that in so people can have something else to do.
Thanks for that. Appreciate that.
So now we'll switch over to naturopathy. There's a big issue. There's no question it's a big issue. I mean, we have naturopaths who are naturopaths because it's something that's been done for a long, long time, and where the word is basically being used in either of two ways. Either somebody's gone through some stupid mail order school, or somebody is simply doing something. In other words, if you have a house painter that comes to paint your house, or you have an auto mechanic that always works in your car, and you love them, you would use them all the time, they're terrific, or a plumber, that doesn't mean that any of those three individuals ever went to school for what they're doing. Very, very often, your painter, your plumber, your auto mechanic, and I could go over a whole bunch of other trades, have never gone to a school to learn that. They learned it the same way people used to learn things. They were sort of interning with somebody. They worked for somebody else that did this, and they, you know, would get corrected and told, no, do this, do that, and they got better and better and decided to do it themselves. And because what they're doing is painting, they're called a painter. And because what they're doing is auto mechanics, they're called a mechanic. Well, herbalist's real easy. Herbalist is somebody that uses herbs to help work with somebody to help improve their health. If somebody is a dietitian, then they've been taught incorrectly, of course, and I don't like what dietitians are taught because it's wrong, but they're taught about foods. If somebody is a board-certified clinical nutritionist, they've got a CCN from the board in Texas, then they've been taught a whole heck of a lot about true facts having to do with nutrition and diet and supplements, et cetera, et cetera. Naturopathy is a more broad paintbrush. So when somebody is a naturopath, really, just like somebody being a painter, you know what they're doing, it simply means that they're using many different modalities together. So if somebody is helping change somebody's diet, knows a bunch about nutritional supplements, hopefully knows a little bit about herbs, maybe or maybe not, knows a little bit about homeopathy, you know, et cetera, et cetera, you can't call them this, that, or the other thing. Which one of those, what are they? Are they an herbalist? Are they a homeopath? Are they a nutritionist? No, you start to put a bunch of different things together, and now you've got the field of naturopathy. And traditionally, that's what it's meant. Somebody that uses multiple modalities of healing to help improve somebody's health without the use of drugs and without the use of surgery. And a bunch of years ago, I don't know what the number is now, I think we're probably up to maybe 50-plus years, National Institute of Naturopathic Medicine started. And National, when they started, they decided that they were going to be totally different from all the other naturopathy schools that were around, which were teaching mostly the traditional methods. And they were going to try and get power. Because in our country, and maybe in our world, I guess, you know, power seems to be so important. It's peculiar, but we're not going to waste time on that. And so in order to get power, they wanted to be able to be called doctors. and they wanted to get licensed by the state because that way they could maybe get licensed to prescribe drugs, although, of course, that's not part of naturopathy. They wanted to be able to maybe do some minor surgeries, although that's not part of naturopathy. They wanted to be able to admit into hospitals, which is not part of naturopathy. And they wanted to be able, if they could, to kick out the other naturopaths that were working that didn't go through their schools because that gave them power. And so National came into being, and then Bastyr, and then Southwest, and then Bridgeport, and you know, we've had a number of them in Canada. And what they do is they produce a group of people which graduate, and they call themselves naturopathic physicians, although in some states the doctors are strong enough to not let them use that term. They say, you can call yourself a doctor. Hey, PhDs are doctors, chiropractors are doctors, but you can't use the word physician. But in many states, they have gotten the word physician, and they're now allowed to sometimes be primary care physicians. They can prescribe any number of a lot of different drugs, all sorts of things that, in my view, are not part of naturopathy. But as they've been doing this, their goal is to kick the rest of us out. And they really don't care how much we know, and they really don't care how long we've been in business. They would rather have a brand new graduate that's just come out of school, which if the person is really lucky and does really, really good, maybe after 10 or 15 years we'll start to know as much as I do after going to lectures and conferences and doing this stuff for 20 years. But, you know, I shouldn't be allowed to practice. The goal is to get power, and what is generally said to the public, which has been pretty much proven not to be true in any field, is that licensing protects the public. Licensing has not been found to protect the public. The worst doctors, the worst mechanics, the worst electricians all have the same licenses from their states as the best ones. And rarely do you even get those licenses pulled. The purpose of licensing is to designate power and to collect revenue for the municipality that you have to pay to get the license. So I'm, you know, in an awkward place as far as being for or against licensing. You know, if they would do it correctly, I wouldn't have an issue with it. But I don't like it when one group says, we don't care how much you know. We don't care how long you've been in practice. If you haven't gone through it our way, we want you to be illegal and kick you out. On the other hand, these schools are not bad schools. They're not bad institutions. I'm not against somebody going to National or Bastyr or Southwest. Don't especially like Bridgeport from feedback I've gotten from many people that have gone through it, but that's a separate issue. And I think they're teaching a lot of good things. It's just that I don't like somebody telling somebody else, you're not any good. There's a joke that goes on in medicine where somebody will say, well, my health practitioner said this, this, and this, and the doctor will look at them and say, and where did that person get his MD degree? Because, of course, the doctor knows the person wasn't an MD. And I say, especially to my cancer patients, how many different oncologists have you been to? And many of them have had four or five separate opinions. And I go, and they all agreed with one another, right? And they look at me like, no, they so totally disagreed with one another that you would have thought that there's no science involved in the treatment of cancer at all. They were completely in disagreement. But none of those people would have said, and where did that other oncologist get his degree? Because they're all oncologists. So you can use that when you want to. You don't use it when you don't want to. So I ended up writing a paper for some website that asked me to do so, and I liked it so much that I continually, update it, revise it, change it. And it's about naturopathy and traditional naturopathy versus medical naturopathy. The article is on my website. There's no shopping cart on my website. Everything's free. So if anybody wants to read a lot more about what I believe in those two areas and what I think should happen having to do with maybe dual licensure, I think the only thing that's important is the old statement that's been around in the U.S. for a long time, which is caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. You know, it's our job to go on to Yelp or one of these various different things and find people that lots of the ratings of other people that have used these professionals have been, I love this man, I love this woman, this is terrific. Because instead we have a country where if a doctor, and I do mean a doctor, I'm talking about a physician, an MD or DO, has been successful in getting a huge number of people well using non-traditional methods, such as one of the doctors in cancer, such as one of the doctors that was treating environmental illness, emotional problems in kids, and they started doing allergy testing and changing sugar. And sometimes these guys lose their licenses, and they get brought up on charges in our, you know, rather screwed up U.S. court system, as an example, and they get brought up on charges, well, you're using non-approved therapies to treat emotional problems in children. And because in our legal system, there's something that's referred to like as opening the door. So, for example, the doctor isn't allowed to bring in 25 or 30 patients that love him to death because they were finally he was able to get them well, because nobody brought him up on charges of not being able to get people well. So you can't say that because that's not the charge. The charge was you were using therapies that are not accepted by mainstream, or you were using tests that were not accepted by mainstream to treat that condition. And it's true. That's the reason they were able to get people well and nobody else could. And the doctor loses their license. So we have a big problem in this country. It's not going away. It's getting worse, because as you start to fight against the people that are trying to do more of this, they dig their heels in and fight even harder. And so we currently have, I think, somewhere between 16 and 18 states in the United States where the naturopaths have gotten licenses from the state, where they are either allowed to be called physicians, or in a very small number like California, where they only got the word doctor. And they don't like having the other people around. They just don't like it, you know, and it's not something that we can do a lot against. California passed a fabulous bill, 2053.5 and 0.6 of the Business and Professions Code many years ago. And as long as that's in force, it protects all of the unlicensed health practitioners, because we are simply required to have a waiver form, which I've always had, that clearly states that you are not licensed by the state, you are not a physician, and that all the treatments you provide must be viewed as complementary to the treatments of the licensed healing arts. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's easy to comply with, but they so badly want to have ways to get at us that when that law passed, it had almost no media attention at all. And so most of the people that I know in the state of California, no matter what unlicensed field they're in, they could be homeopaths, herbalists, nutritionists, I don't care what it is, no matter what licensed field they're in, I will go up to them at a conference if their badge, their name tag says they're in California, and I'll just say, I see you're in California, as I am. Do you have a waiver form that you have your patients or clients sign? And most of them say yes. What does it say on it? And they go, well, you know, the standard things that I'm not treating anybody. Well, you're in violation of the state law. You could be in a lot of trouble. What are you talking about? Because the law requires, in order for you to be covered by it, that among other things, only three or four statements that are required to be on your waiver, anything else you can put you want. But it must say that the treatments I provide, and the word treatment is in the law, that the treatments I provide must be viewed as complementary to those of the state licensed healing arts. So since this was passed under the table so people don't realize it, most people don't have state-approved vernacular in their waivers, and therefore they're operating illegally.
Very well said, and really good advice, David. Your website is davidgetoff.com. You guys can get that article there. You're also the vice president of the Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation, one of my favorite places. You got a DVD there called Children's Emotional Problems, ADD, ADHD, and something else that I can't read on my writing that I have here. And you also have classes that you offer online there. Talk about those.
Well, I've been teaching a course that when I started it, I decided to name Attaining Optimal Health in the 20th Century. The problem was the 20th century went away on me, and it became the 21st century. And so we changed it to Attaining Optimal Health in the 21st Century. But I've now been teaching that course every semester, and I think we're about 21 years now. And it started at about 7 hours, and it went to 10, 12, and 14. And now we're up somewhere around 25 hours of instruction. And we finally got a videotape, you know, about a year ago, and it finally went available online. You know, people can go into PricePottinger, PPNF.org, and just click on classes, and where it says streaming, there's the class right there. Forget what they're charging for it. I think it's $200 for members and $250 for non-members, something like that. And you can take the entire course. You know, you got months to go through it and take it. And during the time you're enrolled in the course, if you have questions, just like if you were in my class, you know, in person, if you happen to be here, because it's also given in person, you can email the questions into Price Pottinger. They send them to me once a week. I give them the answers. The answers all go up searchable on the website. So, you know, you have access to me during the class. And I basically cover all the things that I think people need to know for attaining optimal health. You know, it's a tremendous amount of information. It's a really, I have a lot of people that have taken the class 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times over the last 20 plus years because they say it's just so much information that taking it more helps.
Yeah, it does. I think I've taken it twice, I think. Yeah, something like that. Fantastic class and fantastic stuff from you today, David. We really appreciate it. And we're definitely going to go over to your website at davidgetoff.com as well as ppnf.org. That's Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation. David, thanks again.
You are very welcome. My pleasure.
Alrighty, friends. I hope you thoroughly enjoyed today's episode with David Getoff. His website again is davidgetoff.com, and also check out ppnf.org and check us out next week, probably next Monday or Tuesday.